It's true, but it's an interesting cover for a magazine I like to read. And if sometimes I got to be that guy on the cover, you know, you never really read something that sums up the arc of your life in a sentence that sells, that you go, oh, is that all I am? If you had a more troubled past, I mean, just imagine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You never really got in trouble.
Well.
No one found out.
You got out of it easier than others.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that is true, though? Why did you get in
and other guys didn't at Hollywood? I mean, I know guys that, wow, I won't go into it.
Yeah. It's an important question, I think. And perhaps helpful to people if they understand where you were.
Worse things than you did.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, ultimately, it's that rungs on the ladder going up, rungs coming down, with exceptions to both. But because I think I've always had a pretty good work ethic, and I believe that, and Lord Attenborough told me this 20 years ago, Dickie, who passed away recently, he said, you know, when you find your ambition, all this stuff will clear up. Now, it's never that simple.
When you find your ambition.
My ambition, yeah. So when you stop thinking about yourself as someone who's on the outside, and you start really seeing what's possible for me, what could I do, how could I put these jabs together and maybe get a shot at the title, that's when he thought all this other stuff would clear away. And it wound up being something that was apropos, not just for me, but for, for a lot of other people that he'd worked
with. And do you think now that you're getting a shot at the title, or you already won the title?
I feel like Cassius Clay, standing over the vanquished of your Sonny Liston. But,
Before he changed his name.
Right, he did that. He changed it right after he won.
Yeah.
Came next morning, he said, I'm Muhammad Ali.
Right. All right, well then, then I'm Muhammad Ali. No, I'm not going to make that comparison. What I'm going to say is naturally when you have a big win, there's a time of gloating. And then, not gloating, but there's that immense sense of accomplishment, you know? But that's just another kind of false thing. It's, like Bobby always says, it's like, it's just the next moment. What's the next right thing to do? And I think that's what's helped me transist. People tend to crash when really lousy things happen and when really great things happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You also found love.
Yeah. That's right. Mama Downey helped.
Yeah, Mama Downey, that's a great story because, I mean, you went in a movie. She was not in the... What was she? She was an executive vice president of a firm, wasn't she?
No, she... what she was she was Joel Silver, the producer's on-set producer for a movie called Gothica, and we met in Montreal.
And you fell in love.
Yeah.
But it was only when you went back to L.A. that...
Who pursued whom?
Yeah, I was chasing her down pretty hard. She still is. She's a very practical. She's a nice Jewish girl from the Midwest. I mean, you know, she wouldn't get tangled up with me.
But it's worked. Team Downey.
Oh, sure. I mean, she was a huge part of, I think, the whole process with us, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a great producer.
Still is.
Yeah.
Really.
We go out with this last scene where the two of them argue about who's more responsible for their relationship. This is our closing scene. Here it is.
Why'd you pull me out of Boy Scouts?
As punishment for blowing up the Macross mailbox with M80s.
I was 13. That you remember.
Oh.
That.
Old enough to know better.
You didn't come to my high school graduation or college.
Why? Jail time. Truancy. I was going to reward anything.
I graduated from law school, for Christ's sake.
As opposed to what? Dropping out? Let me tell you something, okay? Here. I put a roof over your head. Money in your pocket, clothes on your back, food in your mouth. Who paid for that college education? Your mother?
You say that's one of your favorite scenes.
Yeah, I think that's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Because?
Because we get to see Bobby is, he's his dad, but now it's a lawyer. Hank's trying to put him on trial for the past. This has nothing to do with the murder. It's about what you did to me. And he cross-examines him, and you win that case. At the end, you say you're right. And in the middle of it, he's cooperative enough, and I know that you had a ton of dialogue to throw me a little something and give me that towel to wrap around my hand.
Much success to all of you.
Got it.
Thank you.
Really.
Thank you, Charlie.
Congratulations on the film. It's great to have all of you here. Back in a moment. Stay with us.
Around the clock, around the world, Bloomberg keeps you connected on television, online, on the radio, and on mobile.
Opportunities aren't always obvious. Sometimes they just drop in. CME Group can help you navigate risks and capture opportunities. We enable you to reach global markets and drive forward with broader possibilities. CME Group, how the world advances.
You are a business pro, solver of the slice, teacher of the unteachable. You lower handicaps and raise hopes. And you rent from National, because only National lets you choose any car in the aisle and go. You can even take a full size or above and still pay the mid-size price.
Nice drive.
Well played, business pro. Well played. Go National. Go like a pro.
Gunderman Group.
Gunderman Group is growing.
Getting in a groove.
Growth is gratifying.
Goal is to grow.
Gotta get greater growth.
I just talked to UPS. They've got expert advice, special discounts, new technologies, like smart pickups. They'll only show up when you print a label, and it's automatic. We save time and money.
Time? Money?
Time and money.
Awesome.
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 I love logistics.
Lisa Dwan is here. She is an actor who is performing three short one-woman plays written by Samuel Beckett. Not I, Footfalls, and Rockabye are all late works written by the great Irish playwright. Ben Brantley has written, Ms. Dwan doesn't just uncover layers, she digs all the way to the void between them. Yes, she speaks Beckett's text like a violin virtuoso playing Paganini, but she also listens and insists that we listen to the quiet that surrounds them. It is a silence so profound that it feels like eternity. Not I, Footfalls, and Rockabilly are playing at the Brooklyn Academy of Music through October 12th. I am pleased to have Lisa Dwan at this table. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure, and Beckett's pleasure, to have you there doing what you're doing. How did this come about? First, your own life circle in terms of you being introduced to Beckett.
Sure. Well, I started off my life as a dancer. I was a ballet dancer. Went to England on a ballet scholarship, danced with the London Lewis Ballet Company. And then knee injuries led me to fall into acting. And I did lots, countless TV series in Ireland, right. The American TV series. And then I was acting in this one series with an actor who was part of the Gate project, where they were committing all of Beckett's plays to film. And that was my landscape and my bar when I came to theatre. I was completely taken.
Do you know what it was?
Yeah, I think Beckett doesn't preach. We spoke about Pinter, Harold right. Pinter's fondness for Beckett. And he has
and they
this,
were friends.
And they were very good friends. And, you know, he's not standing over you with his hand over his heart. He's not trying to sell you anything. He's not being sentimental. And thus, there's an awful lot of space to come to as a viewer. You know, you're invited to bring your own landscape. And as an actor, I mean, it's just so vast. These characters are more like creatures. They're a slice of life. And that's a very expansive landscape to be given.
And the first opportunity you had was?
Well, a couple of years later, I was sent a script of Not I, which is written like music. And I had heard about Not I. I'd heard that there's this play where there's a disembodied mouth 8 foot above the stage in an entirely blackened out auditorium that appears to oscillate or move across the auditorium because of the sensory deprivation. The human mind can't lock it to anything. And so each member of the audience has a completely unique experience in that darkness where they see this mouth roam. And Beckett wanted this text to be spoken at the speed of thought, to play on the nerves of the audience and not the intellect. And when I got this script, it's written like music. You've got these three dots interrupting this beautiful poetry. So it's hard to speak it so fast because you do want to kind of stop and enjoy this beautiful imagery, the language, the humor. But I didn't hear just one stream of consciousness. I heard a kind of cacophony. I heard the nuns. I heard acerbic parochial asides. I heard the streets of Ireland. I heard home. And then I was cast.
Roll tape.
Out! Into this world. This world. Tiny little thing before its time. And I got for what? Girl. Yes, tiny little girl. Into this, out into this before her time. God forsaken. Whole. Cold. Cold. No matter. Parents unknown. Unheard of. He having vanished. Thin air. No sooner buttoned up his breeches. She, similarly, 8 months later, almost at the tick. So no love. Spared that. No love such as normally vented on the speechless infant in the home. No. Nor indeed, for that matter, any of any kind. No love of any kind at any subsequent stage. So typical affair. Nothing of any note till coming up to 60 when. What? 70? Good God. Coming up to 70, wandering in a field, looking aimlessly for cowslips to make a ball. A few steps then, stop, stare into space, then on a few more, stop and stare against one, drifting round when suddenly, gradually, all went out. Oh, that early April morning light, and she found herself in the what? Who? No, she! Found herself in the dark, and if not exactly insentient, for she could still hear the buzzing so-called in the ears, and a ray of light came and went, such as the moonlight cast, drifting in and out of cloud, but so dulled, feeling so dulled, she did not know what position she was in, imagine, what position she was in, whether standing or sitting, but the brain, what, kneeling, yes, with the standing, sitting, or kneeling, but the brain, what, lying, yes, with the standing, sitting, kneeling, or lying, but the brain, still, in a way, for her first thought was, oh, long after, a sudden flash brought up as she had been to believe with the other way. In a merciful God. Quite the mouthful.
Yes, indeed. And you know what I was listening to? I was listening for your breathing, see when you breathe. Hmm. That, I mean, how do you make the decision about breath and that?
Oh, God, I've no time to think about when I'm going to breathe. So I think I circular breathe.
Yeah.
Or just take little gasps whenever I can. But I think if I was to start thinking about breathing on top of everything else, I'd hyperventilate and have a panic attack.
The decision to bring these three to New York, your decision or some producer's decision?
Yeah, I always had it. You know, Not I was first performed in New York in 1972 by Jessica Tandy.
Oh, and the great Jessica Tandy.
Yeah, and Beckett went backstage because she did it in 22, 23 minutes, and he said, "You've destroyed my play." And then he wrote to Alan Schneider and said, "I'm going to direct Billy Whitelaw in this myself and find out if it's theatre or not." And he kept saying to Billy, "You know, you can't go fast enough. I want this at the speed of thought." And she got the piece down to maybe 14 minutes. Yeah. But she had several breakdowns trying to learn it. And in many respects, I'm only able to do it because, Billy did. By performing it, she broke a big psychological barrier, almost like Roger Bannister and the four-minute mile.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm very grateful to her, and Billy became my mentor.
But is it in part a physical thing as well?
Well, in order to stay in this pinprick of light that just lights my lips, it's necessary for my whole body and my head to be fastened into a head harness. So I've got black makeup from here to my chest, then a blindfold and then a pair of tights over my head. And I'm put into a hole in a piece of wood that only takes a third of my face. And then my head is strapped in two places and my arms are put into brackets and I'm just pressed against this piece of wood. And then I obviously go like the clappers.
Talking about these three plays, I think it was Charles Spencer said, they are, A, located at the very brink of death, that undiscovered country after Beckett and his characters often yearn for. Tell me about that.
Well, it's one of the wonderful things about Beckett is this kind of universal landscape. Looking at footfalls, it was a big challenge. I mean, I think in many respects, Not I is a representation of thought.
Yeah.
And it's boundaryless. I think that's why it provokes so many panic attacks in the audience. I think it speaks to people's core.
Do these three compare to Waiting for Godot?
Well, this is late Beckett.
What I
find interesting about late Beckett is that he's really starting to shake off Joyce's influence. that verbosity, that jocular kind of playfulness, which is funny. And, you know, I'm less attracted to it now as I've really looked at what I think is pure Beckett, where he distilled and distilled and pared away all the fat until you're left with something really potent, this real potent essence. And Not I is so lean and so tight, it really gets people in the jugular with footfalls. Among other things, it's like a chamber piece of music, and Beckett really writes like music. And there's so many elements to it, but I suppose broadly speaking, it's an exploration of trauma, of oppression. It's usually played by two actresses. I play both roles, mother off stage and May pacing outside her mother's dying room. And I suppose we all carry these kind of traumas in our heads, don't we? And often we are our own oppressors, and it's been quite interesting to play both roles and that balance.
Here is Sir Trevor Nunn talking about the genius of Beckett. Here it is.
Beckett's absolutely unique, isn't he? I mean, a number of times I've read a short story by Beckett, and it isn't really a short story, it's a prose poem. And in the English language, the great tradition is verse drama, heightened language, the use of language as a very rich ingredient. And Beckett does exactly that in his own very special way. Even though sometimes the plays are very short, even though the expression is very limited, the selection of language, the rhythm of language, the resonance of the language is absolutely extraordinary. And that you find the echo of that in Harold Pinter, the use of silence, the use of stillness, and then just the one phrase that devastates you. Somebody I heard lecturing about Beckett said something that I think is a thing of genius, that somebody in the audience was complaining that that Beckett can seem to be so pessimistic. And this lecturer said, I think in Beckett there is a pessimism that makes optimism look like sentimentality.
Oh,
I thought that was devastating. And I think that's the illumination we get from him.
Exactly what you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. You really realize that sentimentality is the language of gangsters, emotional gangsters. And that's what makes the work so persuasive. Yes, it's hard and bleak and all of that, but, you know, I suppose, without sounding too pretentious, it's the closest thing to a kind of truth that I've ever felt. And I think when I see audiences' responses, you know that it works for that reason.
Of these three, do you like one more than the other?
I think I'm beginning to understand Footfalls, and you know, a lot of people say that it's probably the most difficult of all of Beckett's work, but I think I'm really starting to understand it in a very deep, visceral and personal way, and in order to do that I have to bring in my own landscape.
Beckett's mother was May.
That's right.
In the character pacing outside the room,
mm-hmm,
is May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, Beckett's mother is everywhere.
Really?
Particularly through all the... It was fraught. She considered him to be, maladjusted.
Yeah.
And that was a real wound. And he said to Walter Asmus towards the end of his life, who's my director, you know, maybe I should have been an accountant. And he didn't... He wasn't, you know, being glib.
No, I know.
He felt he'd failed his mother.
In other words, maybe I should have been an accountant because I'm not what my mother wanted me to be as a writer.
Yeah. And it was hard for him. I mean, he was a genius. He couldn't toe the line. Yeah. You know, he left a decent position in Trinity College.
He didn't want to go the easy route either.
No, he took the difficult route. And he was a very courageous writer. You know, he had work rejected. It was interesting reading his letters, which are about to be published, the third volume, some of his rejection letters. You know, I suppose it gives us all hope to think.
I always love when they publish letters, just to see the mind at work and to see how they... Are Beckett's letters that interesting?
Hmm. They are. You really realize he's honing a lot of the repetition. He keeps talking about the unnameable, and I'm working on this text, the unnameable, and he must write the same thing to about 20.
The third one is Rockabye. Yeah. Billy Whitelaw said, a drive towards death.
Hmm. And it really is a drive. When I was rehearsing Rockabye with Walter Asmus, he wouldn't let me get past the first six lines. He kept pulling me back, and I was fit to punch him by the end of a week, and we were still at these six lines. And then one day, he just let me go. And I felt like a glider. And, you know, we spoke about the music of Beckett's work. I really felt like I caught this current, this rhythm, that just took me, despite myself, towards the end of the piece. And I really felt like I needed that rhythm to help me face one of the greatest, deepest, most painful truths of all, is that we are our own other living soul. And, you know, it's a difficult thing to face.
Is it draining to do all this? I mean, these as deep as they are each night? Is it cathartic?
It's definitely cathartic, although I don't want to be too indulgent with that. While I use my own landscape, I have a story to tell, I have a structure to keep, and I'm highly disciplined about that. It is a privilege. You know, I play a country, I play a continent. I travel vast differences in ages and time and scope. What other writer is going to ask that much of me? So it's a privilege to be asked and to be able to offer it.
And you hope the audience takes away what?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have any kind of great ambitions for this. But I am amazed, 25 years after his death, that it is selling out the West End. First time I've performed in New York, we're selling out BAM. And it's with a young audience. And the fact that people seem to be, seem to be ready for Beckett today. I don't know why there's such a renewed appetite, but there's a real kind of urgency in terms of his, ongoing appreciation.
You had this amazing opportunity to meet Beckett's muse, Billy Whitelaw.
That's right.
Tell me about the relationship.
Well, I first had to come to terms with the role myself, so I performed it in 2005 without meeting her, without seeing her performance, thank God. Otherwise, I would have tried to emulate her performance in some way, thus breaking Beckett's rule, don't act. I had to find my own access point. And then after I first performed it, Edward Beckett, the keeper of the estate, came along and said, I think you could meet Billy now that you've found your way. And we greeted each other like long-lost war veterans. She'd never played or met anyone who'd played the role, and neither had I. And about a year after that meeting, she rang me up out of the blue and she said, can you come round, please? I want to give you his notes. I need to give you his notes.
I need to give him.
And I fully expected her to take out an old rehearsal manuscript with his, or his writing on it. And she said, sit down. And I sat at the kitchen table, and she said, begin. So I started the text, and she started conducting me. Ta-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ta-ta. Just as Beckett had with her across her kitchen table. And she really, she set me free with the piece. I think I'd been trying very diligently to, adhere to his notes, no colour, don't act. And I was putting a sort of artificial monotone on his lean lines. And she blew all that out of the water. She said, what are you doing? He wants it all. He doesn't want an actor's craft, but he wants the guts. He wants the real stuff.
He wants you.
Mm. And next thing, the whole piece started to sing.
It's great to have you here.
It's brilliant to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
On the next Charlie Rose, Walter Isaacson. His new book is called The Innovators, How a Group of Hackers, Geniuses, and Geeks Created the Digital Revolution.
Let's not talk about innovation in the abstract. Let me show you exactly what Bill Gates did, what Steve Jobs did, what the people who invented the transistor at Bell Labs did, and how that Bell Labs system led to something. So I wanted to look in a storytelling way. This is a book, a narrative book. It's storytelling. It's not, you know, 12 easy lessons of innovation. Because I wanted to do some real reporting and say, how did they make that creative leap, and how did they do it as a team? But who was the visionary that helped make the leap?
Bloomberg Television.
You are watching
Bloomberg Television.
Bloomberg Television.
Did you get that?
You are a business pro. Maestro of project management. Baron of the build-out. You need a permit to be this awesome. And you rent from National, because only National lets you choose any car in the aisle and go. And only National is ranked highest in car rental customer satisfaction by J.D. Power.
Perfect.
Meow, business bro. Meow. Go National. Go like a pro.
Partnerships occur when both share a passion for improving, for growing in harmony. Speak from the heart and respect the other. Feeling of being comfortable, of being open, that creates the true partnership, which ensures the greatest success. Together, invest in remarkable Indonesia.
How do you start your day so you make better investment decisions?
You watch Bloomberg Surveillance to find out what the markets are doing. And you talk to smart people. Bloomberg Surveillance, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Television.
Landmarks, to local life and cultural treasures. It's a feeling that only a river can give you, that only Viking can give you. Spend less time getting there and more time being there. Viking River Cruises, exploring the world in comfort.
We're at a place in our lives where we need investment income. That's why we invest in tax-free municipal bonds.
We love the income they provide us, income that's federally tax-free. And at this point in our lives, tax-free income is exactly what we need.
Tax-free municipal bonds can serve as the cornerstone for a conservative portfolio. They offer income that's tax-free. Henning & Walsh is a leading expert in tax-free municipal bonds committed to finding you the best bonds to meet your investment goals. We'll even send you our informative bond guide absolutely free if you call right now. 1-800-895-7895. If you have at least $10,000 to invest, consider municipal bonds. They provide income that's federally tax-free. Take charge of your investments today. Call now to receive your free copy of our informative bond guide. It's free, so call now. 1-800-895-7895. That's 1-800-895-7895.
Hello, I'm Pim Fox, and this is what I'm taking stock of on this Friday, October the 10th. The Dow erases its gains for the year, and the S&P 500 posts its biggest weekly loss in 2 years. The ever-bearish Mark Favre of the Doom, Gloom, and Boom report said it's a wake-up call for investors.
The market is signaling something, and I would listen to the market. The market is no longer telling you that it's a straight upward climb.
Or maybe investors should listen to the optimism from Elon Musk. He's the chief executive of Tesla. The reception to the all-wheel drive Model S sedan wasn't great, at least from investors. But Elon Musk told our own Betty Lou that he's not worried.
I don't really follow the stock that much. I'm, you know, because I think sometimes the stock moves for kind of random reasons. And, you know, if that ends up being a mood barometer, then it's not a happy life.
And Deepak Chopra, he's been guiding people to live a fulfilling life, and he's worked with Bill Gross, Nelson Mandela, and Oprah Winfrey. Chopra admires Oprah Winfrey for her simplicity.
You can take the most profound thoughts that there are, and she can translate that into the language that people relate to.
And know your audience or turn to Twitter and apologize. Satya Nadella, Microsoft's chief executive, speaking at a conference for women, told them not to ask for raises and instead wait for the right thing to happen. He has since recanted. You'll meet Linda Heasley, chief executive of the women's retailer Lane Bryant. It is a 110-year-old company. It was built by women for women. I wonder what she makes of Nadella's remarks. But first up, Deepak Chopra. He trained as an endocrinologist in India in the 1960s. He is now an advisor, a confidant of many of today's most successful business and political leaders. And today he is widely known for the use of yoga and other non-Western techniques for well-being and success. His books have sold millions, and he is the co-founder of the Chopra Wellness Center. But according to Chopra, he's just getting started.
How do you describe to people what it is you have accomplished? What do you do?
Well, if I'm honest, I'll say I'm still deciding what I'll do when I grow up. I don't know. I think once you start to define yourself, you start to limit yourself. The core of our being is a field of infinite possibilities. We come to this world with just that awareness. An innocent child is aware, that's all. And then exposed, it unfolds, depending on what it's exposed to. I think if we all return to our state of innocence, that beautiful child inside us, we open ourselves to infinite imagination, creativity, wonder, mystery. So I would rather not define myself.
Very good. Then let's talk about some of the people who you know and have used many of the accomplishments that you have put forth in the world to increase their own well-being. For example, the former head of the largest bond fund in the world, Bill Gross. He is a known practitioner of yoga.
Yeah, Bill Gross I knew when he had not started his first company, or was starting, Idea Lab, I think it was called. But I've met many people like that. What happens is that people who take risks, people who take the initiative, people who are great team leaders in that they know how to put together people that complement strengths, that have a shared vision, that can bond emotionally like a good sports team, that kind of leader will always succeed. And that kind of leader also should have presence. They're never distracted. They're not multitasking, talking to you and checking on their phone all the time. They're warm and friendly, and they're not dependent on you for their self-esteem.
Did that characterize, in your knowledge, that characterize Bill Gross?
Bill Gross, but also, you know, other leaders like Nelson Mandela, Bill Clinton, you know, those are the secrets, by the way, of charisma. Presence, warmth, and self-esteem.
Is there a connection between people's interest in all of these wearable health devices and the kind of well-being that you're describing?
Yes, these days, you know, everything can be measured. So if you want to see how people change and why they change, the motivators today are social connections. Because, you know, if I want to lose weight, you want to lose weight, we do it together. Or whatever we want to do it. So social connections, technology, which is where the wearables come, to some extent consumables that go not only with the wearables, but consumables like natural products that enhance vitality and well-being. Metrics, how do we measure this? And personal development and education.
Is there a connection between the network that you're describing that people can make and, let's say, the network that you've been able to put together? I think of Oprah Winfrey as in your network. You're working
yes,
with her.
Oprah and I are doing a tour right now together, and we have a conversation in front of 10 to 20,000 people. It's quite mind-boggling, the amount of people that come to the shows. Oprah's great because, you know, when I feed her information, she says, make it simple. Then I feed it back to her, she says, make it simpler. Feed it back to her, she says, make it simpler. So I know why she's popular. You can take the most profound thoughts that there are, and she can translate that into the language that people relate to emotionally.
Let's talk physically for just a second. One of the biological states that we are all contending with now is this outbreak of Ebola and EVD68 virus. What's your reaction to that?
Well, as we become a global culture, we're going to see more of this. And so it behooves us now to really take care of people who are not economically as fortunate as us. So, you know, ultimately everything can be traced to poor hygiene, poor living conditions, malnutrition, and basically economic conditions, along, of course, with Ebola, where it is. It's transmitted mainly through fluid transmission, and yet, you know, the climate there is very hot and humid, so the transmission is much easier. So while we take care of the short-term emergency, because, you know, America only gets interested when it affects us. But the point is, everything affects us now. So the best way to get rid of our enemies, even, is to improve their capacity for health, well-being, and happiness. And that's the same solution long-term for Ebola or any other disease that springs in conditions of great impoverishment.
That sounds like advice that grandparents might give a grandchild. You're involved in something having to do with grandparents as well as with PBS.
Yes, the grandparents.com and the PBS series, Feel Grand, hosted by Jane Seymour, 13-part series on health, well-being. You know, my mantra is joyful, energetic body, loving, compassionate heart, restful, alert mind, and lightness of being. And we are ready for it. You know, this is a cool generation of grandparents, myself included.
A cool generation of grandparents, in Deepak Chopra's own words. I wanted to find out just how cool Deepak Chopra is with some more personal questions. I call this segment Get to Know. What's your favorite book right now?
My favorite book of all time is something called Lost Horizon by James Hilton. If you've heard the word Shangri-La, that was the first mention of the word in that book. An idyllic place of consciousness in the Himalayas where no one ages.
If you could sit down to a meal with anyone in the world, who would it be? Living or dead?
Living or dead. I would go for the great sages of all time. You know, Lao Tzu, Confucius, Jesus Christ, Moses, any one of them.
You watch movies? Do you have a favorite movie?
My favorite movies go back in time when I was a kid. You know, things like Lawrence of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago.
Like epics?
I like epics because I think in epic terms, you know. I want our life story, everyone should be an epic.
Coming up on Taking Stock, I'll speak to the chief executive of Lane Bryant. It's the women's retail clothing chain. We're going to learn how the company plans to capitalize on the $17 billion plus size fashion industry. That's next.
Yo, bro, you on Woo Woo? You kidding me? Everybody's on Woo Woo.
Woo Woo.
Lock and load, people.
We're going all in on Woo Woo. Mark, comp us up a profile page.
Susie, write us some posts.
I want sponsored woos. I want targeted woos.
We need an ethnically ambiguous Woo Woo mascot.
Dude, are you still on Woo Woo?
Nah, man. My mom's on Woo Woo.
Hello, beautiful. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hi, Anthony. How much did my discount double check save me?
About $150.
Done. I don't have State Farm, but insurance, find me money.
I got you a dollar.
Oh, you almost had it. You gotta be quicker than that.
Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. There to help you with unexpected savings. That's getting to a better state.
Eliminate your monthly phone bill with Magic Jack. Compare, then make the switch. Don't be fooled by Vonage and Basic Talk deals. Get unlimited local and long-distance calling to the U.S. and Canada for just $35 per year. Click or visit Walmart today.
In the grocery store, they don't come up to you and say, hey, I'd like to go out on a date. But on our time, they do.
It was really nice to be on a site where gentlemen are actually looking for someone of my age.
And then they match you up with somebody that has the same likes and the same values.
I feel like I'm back in high school.
I got my first flirt within about 10 minutes of being on the site. Yeah.
Ourtime.com. Visit today and get started for free.
All Columbus Day weekend at Joseph A. Bank. Buy one, get two free. A huge selection of suits, sport coats, shirts, ties, pants, sweaters, and outerwear. New fall styles. Buy one, get two free. Going on now at Joseph A. Bank.
Taking Stock on Bloomberg, I'm Pim Fox. All right, Satya Nadella may be the chief executive of Microsoft, but he might want to brush up on his people skills. Nadella told a meeting of women in technology today, don't ask for a pay raise, but rather just have faith in the system. Well, the attendees weren't amused, and Nadella apologized. But his remarks offer a question. Do men and women executives view pay raises differently? Linda Heasley is the chief executive of Lane Bryant, the woman's retailer known for apparel for real women. And Linda joins me. now. Linda, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know whether you've got a chance to look at the details of Satya Nadella's speech to a group, 7,500 attendees at a women's technology forum, in which he said, don't ask for the raise, just kind of sit back and wait. And that got me thinking because, you know, I looked into the history of Lane Bryant and Dressbarn, both companies founded by women. What's been your experience as an executive?
Well, I would say one thing relative to the reference to karma. The only thing that I leave to karma are hoping my plane arrives on time. And I would say to all women, you have to ask what you want for. And I think it's an outstanding time for the women at Microsoft to ask for those raises.
Very good point. Right now they can say, you took back your remarks, we're going to ask for a raise.
Absolutely.
Now, I noted that, for example, with Lane Bryant, and I want you to come in on this, it was one of the first companies to offer health insurance, one of the first companies to offer disability insurance to their workers. And indeed, when they went public, this was a company that set aside 25% of the stock for the actual employees.
Is it a wonderful company? Yes, and we're very proud of our legacy of what we do for all of our associates.
All right, now you're part of the Ascena Retail Group that also includes the Dressbarn. Tell us what your goal is with Lane Bryant.
Well, our goal is to put fashion first, not size. And the legacy of Lane Bryant is a wonderful one. It's over 100 years old. And while the logo has changed outside the door, our mission has not. We all are about her and giving her the confidence that she deserves and the fashion she also deserves.
Now, has that been a particular issue because of the focus on being thin and being, a size zero as opposed to being normal?
Absolutely. We feel that the fashion industry has overlooked this client. And it's not just the fashion industry, it's a lot of women's apparel, and has also relegated her to certain rules that we're saying don't apply. It's time to bust those myths. Our women can wear vertical stripes. Our women can belt their waists. We're very proud of our women, and we want to help her show that.
Now, you also have a line of intimate apparel, I noticed, Cacique. I'm wondering if you can describe what's going on there.
We're very proud of Cacique, and thank you for pronouncing it correctly.
I called.
It's wonderful. We offer extended sizes up to FG and H cups as well, from a band of 36 all the way up to well over the 40s. And again, it's about beauty inside and out. It's about giving women the confidence that they need to do whatever they plan to do that day.
Now, you have experience as an executive at CVS as well as at Limited Brands. What has been your trajectory as a woman executive? Is it the retail industry which gives the opportunity, or do you still have to take that as well?
I think opportunity exists in many, many industries. Retail is particularly great for women. I will tell you that it's always about setting your sights and then asking for what you want. At the same time, I think be open to opportunities. Sometimes I've had to take some lateral steps to get to the next promotion, but there is always opportunity. It abounds.
What is the strategy right now for Lane Bryant? Because I noticed the Cacique boutiques, you're opening those. In fact, you're opening one currently. What's the strategy for the Lane Bryant brand?
The strategy is to continue the mission that we have, to provide an experience that's just for her, to continue to push fashion forward, to continue to do designer collaborations, to continue to deliver
like Isabel Toledo.
Exactly. Isabel Toledo, I'm wearing Lila Rose. We also did a line with Sophie Thiele for Cacique. We've been blessed with these designers who have also believed in our mission. The concept store that we just opened in Jersey City, we're very proud of. And it's to give her a special boutique feel, a residential feel, and continue our mission.
I want to thank you very much for sharing your mission with us. Linda Heasley is the chief executive and the president of Lane Bryant. Coming up on Taking Stock, if you mix speedboats, rum running, and an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, what do you get? You get a rum worthy of the name The Real McCoy. Details ahead.
Gunderman Group.
Gunderman Group is growing.
Getting in a groove.
Growth is gratifying.
The goal is to grow.
Gotta get greater growth.
I just talked to UPS. They've got expert advice, special discounts, new technologies, like smart pickups. They'll only show up when you print a label, and it's automatic. We save time and money.
Time? Money?
Time and money.
Awesome.
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 Awesome. Awesome.
I love logistics.
Thank you.
Anton's Animal Kingdom.
Anton.
How may I help you?
Help.
Be quiet.
Quiet.
Silence.
Silence.
If only everything was as easy as creating your website with Wix. Go to Wix.com today. It's free.
Ally Bank really has no hidden fees on savings accounts.
That's right.
It's just that I'm worried about, you know, hidden things.
Okay, why's that?
No hidden fees from the bank where no branches equals great rates.
The challenges that industry or enterprise faces the most is the consumerization of IT. Companies are having to increasingly be aware of their employee base, consuming of mobile technology and capability, and bringing that into the business and trying to leverage it in their daily work. Security is even more important in the consumerization of IT. Samsung has addressed this by bringing in a security framework to help the enterprise actually get the balance of both. Samsung's doing a lot to help our businesses meet those changes and those challenges. I believe we're the right solution for them. Samsung is committed to a holistic approach in meeting the needs of our enterprise customers in the areas of security, software, solutions, and support.
Realize the full potential of mobility. Find out more at Bloomberg.com/ad/mobile next.
Hey, what are you doing today?
I'm packing up the computer. Photos, work files, you name it.
Lovely. See you in a few hours. Did you get everything backed up?
Took care of it.
For just $59.99 a year, Carbonite backs up your irreplaceable files automatically, so you don't have to. Try it for free at Carbonite.com.
You're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money. Call 800-465-3800 and meet with your Insperity Business Performance Advisor today. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Bailey Pryor has 6 Emmy Awards for making documentaries. One documentary featured Bill McCoy, a larger-than-life rum runner during Prohibition. Bailey liked the story and the character so much, he became a rum runner too, a legal one.
I've been making documentary films for about 25 years, and I came up with this idea to do this film about Bill McCoy, who was the pioneer rum runner of the Prohibition era. So he was the first guy to fill up a boat full of rum in January of 1920 down in the Caribbean, sail it up to New York City, and act as a floating liquor store 3 miles offshore, so right off Sandy Hook, New Jersey. And that was not breaking the law at that time, because in 1920, 3 miles out was the international boundary. So people would...
So he didn't get hit by the Prohibition?
No. Right. So it was totally legal what he was doing. So people at night would go out there and they would buy from him, and what they brought back in, that was illegal. Obviously, you're going back into U.S. waters, but Bill never broke the law. But he became famous for being the real McCoy, and that name really got propagated because of him, because he never adulterated the alcohol.
Where does the money come to do all this? I mean, you know, you're a filmmaker. You know, now you've got to be a business person. You've got to raise money. You've got to get people to support this. What about the costs?
Well, you know, originally we started with our money. My wife, Jennifer, and I founded the company, and we, you know, she's our art director. She does all the graphic design. She designed our look, our label, our logos, our bottles, everything. So we just put a little bit of our own money in and worked our way into it. And then eventually we met, through a friend of mine, Sean Heiniger, we met John Sculley, who was the former CEO of Apple Computer. So I met John, and he seemed to really take to it and said he's real interested in it. And he was sort of, at first, he was sort of like, well, you know, I do tech, you know, I do healthcare. I don't know if I'm going to get involved in consumer products, you know, in rum. So, you know, I came back to him about a year later after having really figured it all out. Because he said, you know, when are you going to be ready? When are you going to have rum in a bottle? And I said, about a year from now. And he said, great, come back in a year. So about a year later, I came back and said, we got the rum, it looks great, this stuff is fantastic. You know, we've built this great relationship with Richard Seal down in Barbados. And he said, all right, I'm interested.
Okay, so you pull the people in, and you've, what, had a run last year of about 1,000 cases?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, and just to give the perspective, I think what Bacardi does, about 21 million cases.
Yes.
You're on track to do 3,000 cases this year.
About. Yeah, maybe a little less than that, yeah.
Tell us about the actual rums, the evidence itself.
Well, we've got three expressions. There's our three-year-aged, our five-year-aged, and our 12-year-aged, and they're all made exactly the same way. They come from pure blackstrap molasses from Barbados, all from the distillery. Richard grows all the sugarcane on his property, but he sells the sugarcane to the local sugar mill. They turn it into, you know, they mill it for sugar, and then the leftover byproduct of making refined white sugar is molasses. So they've got a pipeline that goes from the sugar mill back to Foursquare Distillery. So it's very viscous. I mean, it's very liquidy, so it can roll down a pipeline, and it goes to the distillery super fresh and very sugary, and that's what we use to make the rum.
Bailey Pryor and the Real McCoy. All right, now from running to running around the baseball diamond. Yes, Major League Baseball playoffs. They've offered Fox Sports 1 its biggest ratings yet. But as you're about to find out, the fledgling sports channel has a long way to catch up to the media giant ESPN. Here to tell us more about Fox 1 Sports is Bloomberg Businessweek's Ira Boudwe. Ira, all right, so tell us, what's going on with Fox Sports 1?
Well, this is a big moment for them because of the Major League Baseball playoffs, the National League, they have rights. Some of the National League games on Fox Sports 1, which is the newly launched 24-hour network that's supposed to challenge ESPN, and they need live sports to, you know, compete. And they hit almost 4 million viewers with the Nationals-Giants game 4 earlier this week.
Is 4 million a lot?
For them, it's a record. It's their best yet. So, but for ESPN, in the same span that Fox Sports 1 has been on the air, ESPN has hit that number over 150 times. So it's piddling to them, and that's sort of who they pegged initially as their competition, but that's not really a realistic target for them now. They just need to kind of grow their way over years and years and years toward ESPN.
You say years and years and years.
Right.
I mean, is there a plan to make this actually happen, or are they just going to see what happens in terms of bidding rights?
I think there is. I mean, I think out of the gate, they were thumbing their noses at ESPN a little bit. They set up this thing at one of their launch events to mock the way ESPN obsesses over stories like Tim Tebow and things like that. And so they really set ESPN as the target. But really, for them, it's more like, you know, they need to compete with CBS Sports, NBC Sports Networks, and the other smaller ones while they wait around for bigger rights deals to come due. So like the NFL, National Basketball Association, all these big deals that are not really available till 2020 and beyond. And that's when we're going to see if they really are bidders, if they really are competitors. If they can land some of those rights, then they can compete for ratings and for affiliate fees and for advertising dollars, maybe with ESPN.
I want to thank you very much, Ira Boudwe, joining us from Bloomberg Businessweek. Read more about it at businessweek.com. Coming up on Monday, I'll be talking to the X-Files star Gillian Anderson about her career and her new book. Thanks for taking stock. I'm Pim Fox. Good night.
Bloomberg Television is brought to you by Boeing, where the drive to build something better inspires us every day.
Ours was the first modern airliner, revolutionary by every standard. And that became our passion, to always build something better. Airplanes that fly cleaner and farther on less fuel, that redefine comfort and connect the world like never before. After all, you can't turn dreams into airplanes unless your passion for innovation is nonstop.
Today's Bloomberg ticker is brought to you by PowerShares QQQ, leading the intelligent ETF revolution.
Place in our lives where we need investment income. That's why we invest in tax-free municipal bonds.
We love the income they provide us, income that's federally tax-free. And at this point in our lives, tax-free income is exactly what we need.
Tax-free municipal bonds can serve as the cornerstone for a conservative portfolio. They offer income that's tax-free. Henning & Walsh is a leading expert in tax-free municipal bonds, committed to finding you the best bonds to meet your investment goals. We'll even send you our informative bond guide absolutely free if you call right now. 1-800-895-7895. If you have at least $10,000 to invest, consider municipal bonds. They provide income that's federally tax-free. Take charge of your investments today. Call now to receive your free copy of our informative bond guide. It's free, so call now. 1-800-895-7895. That's 1-800-895-7895.
Nearly 7 million clients. How did Edward Jones get so big?
Let me just put this away. Could you teach our kids that trick?
By not acting that way. It's how Edward Jones makes sense of investing.
Our Name Your Price tool helps. Oh, Jamie, you got a little something on the back of your shoe there.
First time. Danger. Price tech. Alert.
Price tech. Hey, guys.
Is this normal? Well, Progressive is a price tag free zone. We let you tell us what you want to pay, and we help you find options to fit your budget.
Alert. Where are they taking them?
I don't know.
This seems excessive.
Decontamination in progress.
I don't want to tell you guys your job, but...
Policies without the price tags. Now that's Progressive.
You an advertiser spending more than 50 grand a week on TV? Are you absolutely certain you know how every ad dollar is performing? Start using TV attribution from C3 Metrics. It's being used right now. Get a month of TV attribution for free from C3 Metrics. That's one free month.